realize that ethical principles are involved. If you have any knowledge of the Kabbalistic method, place your meditation on the tree. Stage 3. Having thoroughly filled your mind with the ideas set for the meditation work, picture in your imagination a symbolic image, figure or scene that shall symbolize it. Keeping this before your mind's eye, slow down your thought processes till you begin to feel rather than reason. Try, as it were, to listen mentally. Do not try to hold this mental stillness for more than a few moments, even if you feel you are getting results, because it is a very potent method of mind working and it is not good to do it for long at a time. However fascinating you may find it, discipline yourself to pass on firmly to the next stage, for it is here that the real work is done. Stage 4. Mentally dedicate yourself in the name of the All Good to the service of the One Life without distinction of friend or foe. Let the good that you are about to invoke come through for all, relying upon the cosmic law to adapt it to their needs or their healing. Stage 5. Think of yourself as a part of the group soul of your race, your life a part of its life, and its life the basis of yours. Then, invoking the name of God, open your mind as a channel for the work of the Masters of Wisdom. Stage 6. Meditate again on the subject set for the work of the week. Stage 7. At the conclusion, say aloud, "It is finished." Imagine a pair of black velvet curtains being drawn across the scene you have built up in your imagination, as if it were on a stage. Let the curtains approach from either side till they meet in the middle, thus blotting out the scene. Rise from your seat and stamp your foot firmly on the ground to affirm your return to normal consciousness. You must be careful to always close down after meditation, otherwise you may find yourself becoming oversensitive. If this should occur, discontinue the meditation work for a week. If it persists, let us know. Meditation by this method is potent and has to be done carefully. It is not foolproof. Every day, at any hour convenient to yourself, but always at the same hour and if possible in the same place, repeat this meditation. Keep strictly to the method and exclusively to the subject set for the week. It is only by single-pointed teamwork that results are obtained. A diffused benevolence never gets anywhere. Never attempt to deal with specific problems or to direct the course of affairs on the physical plane. Bring through spiritual force and leave it to that force to work its own way. We shall be glad to hear from you once a month if you care to communicate with us. Formally incorporated the Polish border areas into the German Reich. The first actual letter was dated October 8, 1939 and contains an important definition of the concepts of the group mind and the group soul. Letter number 1, for October 8, 1939. The Fraternity of the Inner Light has for one of its rules, the avoidance of all participation in politics, national or international, and these letters, sent to our members and friends whom the call of war has scattered, are no departure from that rule, for there are certain basic principles that transcend all partisanship. These are the prerogative of no party nor any nation, but are shared by all things living, because they are the laws of evolving life. In the light of these spiritual principles we can guide our lives with steadfastness and certainty through all crises, and may know a sense of inner peace and security that cannot be shaken by any circumstances, not even death itself. And more than this, we can learn how best to bring such gifts as we have to give the common weal, for though there is no lack of goodwill and sacrifice, efficiency is not so common. Whatever we may be doing active service, civil defense or our daily tasks, we should remember that it is a part of the one life. In times of universal stress, such as the present, we find ourselves sensitized to things of which we are normally unaware, or of which, though we may know in theory, we have had no personal experience. Among these is the group soul of the race. Who has not felt a sense of participation in this larger being, a total inability to insulate ourselves from it, however we might try? We realize with inescapable clearness that we are parts of a larger whole and that none can live unto himself. We learn from actual experience the meaning of the words "we are all members one of another." But in addition to the group soul, there is also the group mind, and we must distinguish between them in theory, though in practice they are inseparable. The group soul is to erase what the subconscious mind is to an individual. It contains the cumulative experience of the past. It acts as a counterpoise against all shifts of the wind of changing circumstance, so that, instead of being blown hither and thither, the trend of the crowd mind will be steadfast and predictable. But the group soul of a nation is much more than a center of stability. It is a source of inexhaustible dynamic energy, and we, as individuals, draw on it. We do this unconsciously in any case, but we can also do it consciously and deliberately and for specific purposes. The group mind, on the other hand, is comparatively superficial, shifting and veering with the surface currents and the winds of circumstance. LT can be compared to the surface of consciousness of an individual. But though it is superficial in itself, it rests on the solid foundation of the group soul. Nevertheless, being unstable and easily influenced, it can be swayed by propaganda, by rumor, by personal feelings and the interests of individuals and groups, and it can, as it were, become detached from its solid base over considerable areas, rising up like bubbles on the surface of a boiling liquid. LT is for us who understand the nature of the invisible realities and have trained ourselves in their use, to bring all our force to bear to hold the race life firmly together as a unified whole, welded to a spiritual basis like a house built upon a rock that cannot be moved. The 15th of October 1939 compulsory national service is introduced in Finland. The second letter gave an example of one way in which occult meditation can work upon the group mind. Letter number 2, for October 15, 1939. We have now made a start on the work we have set out to do, the opening of a channel whereby spiritual influences can contact the group mind of the race. We believe that there is a cosmic plan being worked out, of which the present conditions form a phase, and that we can consciously cooperate with the working of that plan. In confirmation of this belief, I would like to draw attention to two things that have occurred. Either of these, of course, might be coincidence, but it is unlikely that they both would be. Some 8 weeks ago we decided to call together a group of our members and friends to form the nucleus of a meditation circle, and the date chosen for the first meeting was Sunday, October 1st. This date was chosen for psychic reasons as being the one on which the forces with which we proposed to cooperate would commence to flow. It is interesting to note that the same day was subsequently selected by the religious denominations of this country as a national day of prayer and intercession. May we not conclude from this that there is a current of spiritual force that moves in a definite manner, that there is something purposive and predictable in its workings, and that we are in touch with it? Secondly, at the meeting held at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning October 1st, in our sanctuary at 3, Queensborough Terrace, the address and meditation instruction were based on the opening communication of the series, which were already stenciled and ready to be sent out on the appointed day. The members and friends there assembled meditated with a view to getting in touch with the group mind of the race in order that these teachings should be given to it through the invisible psychic channels that from time immemorial initiates have made use of in order to direct the group mind of the nation that they serve. Those who were assembled at that first meeting can bear witness to the fact that they were told that the ideas which were being used for the group meditations would inoculate the group mind of the race and would shortly be expressed in influential quarters that would ensure them a hearing, and that this was the way the adepts, whose group mind forms the higher self of the race, have always worked. At 8 p.m. on Monday evening, some 36 hours later, the address and meditation then given were repeated almost verbatim by the Archbishop of York broadcasting to the nation. Is this again a coincidence, or is it a further confirmation of the existence of spiritual influences at work on the inner planes? I draw attention to these things, not because I wish to boast, than which I dislike nothing more, but because of the confirmation they give of the occult teaching concerning the invisible governance of the world. The 22nd of October 1939 in a radio broadcast from Berlin, Joseph Goebbels, Germany's Minister of Propaganda, calls Winston Churchill a liar. The meditation work for the week given at the end of this letter was making contact with the spiritual influences ruling our race, using for this purpose the symbol of the rose upon the cross. In the third letter, Dion Fortune was able to report some initial success. Letter number 3, for October 22, 1939. The work of building a channel of communication between the physical place and the inner planes goes well. The results obtained in the group meditation on Sundays are proving very interesting and surprisingly good. To open the doors to all comers, as we have done, and out of those who enter, to form a meditation group for advanced work, is a very bold experiment indeed. It is one, in fact, that I would never have ventured upon had I not received express instruction concerning the withdrawing of the veil. For many years I have protested against occult secrecy, though observing my oaths in the matter. Circumstances are such that I now have, within reasonable limits, a free hand. Traditional experience must necessarily be a guide, but it should not be a jailer, especially when a new epoch inaugurates new conditions. At any rate, whatever may be the opinion of my fellow initiates upon my policy, the results appear to justify it. The 29th of October 1939, in London this week, the government is given a white paper that exposes Nazi persecution of Jews and dissidents, and reveals the existence of concentration camps. Results to justify Dian Fortune's open-door policy were not slow in coming, as she describes in the fourth letter, which we quote in full. Letter number 4, for October 29, 1939. The work of the group that meets on Sundays in the sanctuary at 3, Queensborough Terrace, forms the focusing point of the meditation work that is done in response to these letters. Not that it is impossible for people to make their own contacts individually, for this can always be done by those who know how, but because the meditation technique that we employ makes it possible for people who have not had any esoteric training to cooperate in the work. These will find it an interesting experience to observe the difference between individual work and organized group work. The work of the group, like the work of each meditation period, goes in regular stages, systematically building up an organic structure on the inner planes. In this, the group meeting in the sanctuary form the vanguard. Where they have gone, the rest can follow without difficulty. Hitherto, we have been practicing the technique of group symbol making, which is exactly the same as that laid down for individuals in the meditation instructions issued with the first of these letters, save that a description of the symbols to be visualized is given by the leader of the meditation group, and the rest have to build them up as pictures in their imagination. From the first we have had the interesting experience of the symbols coming alive, thus, indicating that they were contacted on the inner planes. The process is like building a bridge from both sides, those working on the inner planes building the thought forms downward from the higher levels while we build upward from the earthly plane. Last Sunday we reached a point when it was no longer necessary to use the imagination to build the symbols, as these had now taken on definite astral forms and appeared and maintained themselves of their own accord. The reality of the astral forms was indicated by the fact that one member of the group, owing to association of ideas already established in connection with the symbols, got switched on to another line as a train is switched by the points, and found herself in the sanctuary at Glastonbury in her vision, instead of at 3.q.t, and despite all her efforts, had to stay there till the meditation ended. This clearly shows that there is something much more in the meditation work than the use of imagination. The work in the sanctuary always starts with the symbol appointed from the group as a whole, and from this it develops like a growing plant throwing up a shoot, and from this shoot forms the basis of the work that is set out for the next week's task. Starting from the symbol of the rose upon the cross, we immediately found it surrounded by golden light of great brilliance, while the rose itself was outlined in what is called the diamond light, which indicates a very high grade of power indeed. It was then perceived that the golden light and the cross were formulated inside a cavern. This told us where we were working. This cavern is known to the initiates as the cavern beneath Mount Abignus, the hill of the vision, of which the earthly symbol is Glastonbury Tor. It was at this point that the member of the group who missed the turning found herself in the sanctuary at Glastonbury, though the significance of the vision had not then been explained. It is also interesting to note that the sanctuary in the Garden of Chalice Orchard stands at the same height above sea level as the brick conduit through which water reaches the reservoir from the center of the Tor, where a chamber must exist, though it has never been explored. In the light that filled the cavern, five figures were discerned. These were not actual presences, but shadows thrown from a higher plane by the masters with whom we shall be working. In due course they will formulate into the actual presences. Since writing the above words, the Sunday meeting has taken place, and as expected, the presences formulated and the work of cooperation began. As will be remembered, the work undertaken was to bring to the race mind a realization of the support afforded it by cosmic law. As we contacted the race mind, a tremendous sense of weight and resistance came down on the group as the gears engaged and the real work began, for hitherto we have been making our tools and those sitting in the group had their first experience of what resisting astral forces can feel like. Then, as the concept of cosmic law was formulated, the weight lifted and we had a very remarkable sense of power and momentum. It was a fairly rough trip for inexperienced workers, but everyone came through well. It is interesting to note that the ideas and ideals which we are trying to transmit to the mind of the race have once again been voiced in high places. Those who heard the broadcast speech of Mr. Horblisher, Minister for War, could not fail to have been struck by the viewpoint and attitude expressed. In a letter that one of our members received from a highly placed German friend in America, the same note was struck. All these incidents may, of course, be coincidental, but the law of probability is against it. We have now reached the point when the astral meeting place has been established, and in future those who join with us in the meditation exercises should visualize the rose cross as standing in the cave under the hill of vision, for this is now the meeting place. They should look for the figures of the masters formulating in the golden light, and ought to have no difficulty in seeing at least the shadows. The 5th of November 1939 in Moscow, Molotov blames the war on capitalist forces and says Russia's aim is peace. The work was consolidated during the following week as the fifth letter indicates. Diane Fortune draws a firm line, in answer to a French correspondent, between positive and negative ways of working with the inner powers, and makes a forthright statement upon the question of pacifism. Letter number 5, for November 5, 1939. Our work has now been proceeding for a month, and we are hoping to hear from those cooperating with us concerning the experiences they have received in the course of it. We have again an interesting experience to recount in a speech made during the course of last week. The Pope gave expression to the ideals for which we are working, and, in addition, especially stressed the concept of spiritual law overruling all things, which it will be remembered was our meditation subject for last week. Far be it from us to suggest anything so foolish as that we are responsible for the Pope's speech, but we do claim that the incidents we have recorded from week to week are strong evidence in support of our contention that there is an active center of spiritual influence on the inner planes that is broadcasting telepathically certain spiritual ideals. The work of formulating the astral contacts is now completed. The cross and the cave built up of their own accord in the meditation performed in the sanctuary on Sunday last. Until further notice, the formulation of the rose cross and the cave and the presence of the masters in the light that shines upon the cross should be performed at each meditation. At the last group meditation we perceived seven figures in the light, robed in the symbolic colors of the rays, which are the colors of the spectrum. This indicates that we have now got our full range of contacts. We also perceived a great crowd of dark figures in the background, touched with light here and there. These represent those in the rank and file of the nation who are beginning to pick up telepathically the messages we are sending out. It is to be expected that the numbers of those participating in our work will soon be increasing. The gold light changed into the diamond light as the meditation built up, and when we made contact with the group mind of the race we did not again feel the sense of stress and strain of the previous week, but instead a very wonderful sense of the steadfastness and the peace that comes from strength. There came a clear realization that we do not have to lift the burden in our own strength, but to stand like an engineer with his hand on the lever that sets the machinery in motion. We have simply to pull the lever, and the machinery of the universe does the rest. Our work is to formulate and reformulate day by day the mental link between the spiritual influences and the group mind of the race. This we do by means of our meditation work, and as we do it, we can, if we are at all sensitive, feel the power come through. The building of the images and the imagination is a purely mechanical act, like turning the starting handle of a car. We use the reactions of our minds as indicators by means of which we read off what is happening on the inner planes and how the work is going. A little practice should enable all of you to do this with a considerable degree of accuracy. We cannot do better than to continue on our work of realizing the all-powerful nature of spiritual law, in addition to the special meditation for each week. I received a letter from a French correspondent last week, urging that we should use our knowledge and power to make personal attacks on the leaders of the German nation in order to confuse their minds and even destroy their lives, but this would be quite the wrong way to work. Nothing and nobody is altogether evil, therefore it is never justifiable to try and destroy any person or thing by direct action, but only to open a channel whereby spiritual forces are brought to bear upon the problem. This is the meaning of our Lord's command to leave the wheat and tares to grow together till the harvest. Hate is an evil thing in itself, whatever its provocation, and to call it righteous indignation does little to improve it. Our work is a work of healing, and no hate must come of it. We look to see a regenerated Germany rise up in strength and greatness as well as goodwill and peace. On this great earth of ours there is room for all if they will only cooperate. All the time that we are working for a successful issue of the war, we must look forward to a happy piece of constructive comradeship. This thought should conclude every meditation. By an act of God's mercy, which we needed much more than we deserved it, we are being given a second chance to rebuild civilization, a chance that was thrown away at Versailles and in the subsequent intrigues and inanities of Geneva. To achieve this peace there must be strength and integrity in the souls of the nations, there must be willingness to sacrifice individual national interests for the good of the whole, the strong remembering that they are in a better position to make sacrifices than the weak. But there must also be a readiness to unsheath and use the sword of justice when it is needed. It was this unwise reluctance to do this that led to the present war. Pacifism is too one-sided to be workable in an imperfect world, and has too often been made use of as a means of escape from hard reality. It is not well to pass by on the other side when thieves are beating honest men. This is no part of Christianity as I understand it. The 12th of November 1939, King Leopold of Belgium and Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands offer to help in seeking the elements of an agreement before war begins in Western Europe. By the following week the pattern of symbols built up becomes a regular framework for future work, and Dion Fortune explains how it is that meditation work of this kind is important. Letter number 6, for November 12, 1939. The formulation of the symbols and the building of the astral temple has been accomplished, so it is no longer necessary to give so much of our limited space to this side of the work. Our members and friends should continue week by week to use the formula of the Rose Cross, the Cave, and the seven figures that come in the light. These will become more and more real to them week by week, and they will find developments arising out of them which we shall be interested to hear about in the monthly reports. When we open our consciousnesses to spiritual forces by meditating thereon, we become channels for these forces, and when we do it in group formation, a very wide channel is opened and the forces come through with great power, far greater than the collective force of those forming the channel. Realizing clearly the nature of evil, but not dwelling on it in meditation lest we accidentally contact it and expose ourselves to its disintegrating influence, let us work steadily day by day at bringing through the neutralizing spiritual forces that shall hold it in abeyance and gradually neutralize it as an alkali neutralizes an acid. The 19th of November 1939 in Warsaw, barricades are being erected around the Jewish ghetto. In the seventh letter, Dion Fortune outlines the theoretical basis for the formulation of astral imagery. Also detailed and very practical instruction on how to contact high spiritual forces and bring them through the astral channels. Letter number 7, for November 19, 1939. Our work has now advanced so far that we have got a clear and well-formulated astral image with which to operate. These thought forms are the basis of all occult work. They are not real in the sense that material objects or spiritual beings are real, being self-existent, for they are what initiates call the creations of the created, but they nevertheless have a very definite existence on the inner planes. They are used as a means of attracting and focusing forces, and to visualize them in the imagination is exactly like dialing a number on the telephone. Their use gives a power and clarity to meditation work that is never attained when purely abstract and mystical methods are used. Nevertheless, they are only a means to an end, and although we should fully realize their uses and value, we must never be superstitious over them. What the human mind has made, the human mind can unmake, and we could, if we wished, disperse them just as easily as we have made them. Unless they are dispersed by the proper means, however, they persist on the inner planes indefinitely, and can be revivified by anyone who has the necessary knowledge. Mind power, used in this way, is very potent, and it is therefore very necessary to be sure we are using it rightly. This is a very serious responsibility, so serious that no erring human being ought ever to take it upon themselves. Therefore we never outline the form that the practical results should take on the physical plane, but always work in terms of ideals and spiritual principles and let the forces for which we build the channels express themselves according to their own nature. It may be asked how it is, since the methods outlined are so potent, that we have dared to reveal them openly. We dare to do this because we are acting under instruction, and the forces with which we are operating are under control from the inner planes. Any abuse of the forces would quickly be detected and dealt with, though not by us. In order to work in terms of spiritual principles, we must realize them clearly and understand their nature. Just as the first month of our work was spent in building up the astral forms with which we intend to work, so we must now begin to bring through the spiritual forces that shall use them as channels. In order to do this, we must begin at the beginning of all things and picture the worlds coming into being. This may seem very remote from the pressing problems of the day, but its effects will quickly be realized if the attempt is made. People are already beginning to report that the work is having a marked effect on their health and nervous poise. The effect of this exercise will be found even more marked. Being seated in your meditation posture, formulate the cave, and then, instead of visualizing the coming of the presences, feel yourself to be seated alone there, in meditation. You will, in fact, do your meditation alone in the cave during the week, though on Sunday we shall all assemble as usual. Picture to yourself the state of unmanifested existence on the eve of the dawn of a cosmic day. Picture it as a great ocean of indigo blue darkness, like the sky on a moonless night. Do not picture it as black, because that neutralizes all activity. Then imagine a shaft of dim light, like a searchlight, penetrate the darkness and begin to swing with a circling motion. Visualize currents of light being set up by this circular motion. See them grow brighter and brighter and take on colors. Repeat to yourself as a litany or mantra the words, "The rings and the rays swing into being." Imagine yourself standing poised on the globe of Earth with arms lifted in invocation as it swings in its orbit through space. There is a famous picture by G.F. Watts that can serve as a model, reproductions of which can be obtained for a few pence. The colored plates in astronomy books also help the realization. Out of all these, build up a mental picture of the beginnings of evolution and imagine yourself as part of it, swinging through space with the movement of the cosmic tides. Remember that you actually were part of it, though in an unevolved state, and that the experiences then undergone remain deep in your subconscious memory, and that they will be aroused by the reconstructing of the picture images. The result of this work will be to put you in touch with primordial causation. Having obtained a clear mental picture by means of the foregoing exercise, remind yourself that these forces still operate on the highest levels of the inner planes, and it is their perfect rhythm and balance which determines that harmony of all the levels of manifestation, like the flywheel of a vast machine. Think of this enormous swirl and rhythm as carrying with it, like leaves on a stream, the nations and their affairs, so that, however much they may swirl in eddies among themselves, the main current is all the time bearing them away to the great ocean of being.